And episode number 10 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast is brought to you by the fact that we've made it to episode number 10 without having a real sponsor for this podcast yet.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
The Big 1-0, episode number 10 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. We're at Pinstripe Lanes across social media. And, of course, we're at PinstripeLanesPodcast.com, iTunes, Google Play, wherever else you get podcasts. Hello, I am Ralphie Aversa. By the way, if there's somewhere that you normally get podcasts and you can't find ours, please let me know. We're still kind of sorting through that as well. 10 episodes is a lot, but at the same time, it really isn't. At Pinstripe Lanes, again, on social media, there's a contact form over at PinstripeLanesPodcast.com. I'm at Ralphie Aversa on social media as well. I just want to, we have a great guest this week. The former senior director of public relations for the Yankees from 96 to 06. Think about that time in Yankee history. Rick Cerrone's got a lot of stories. He's going to tell a bunch of them to you in this extended edition of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Before we get to that, I just want to give a shout out to Adam, who discovered us right after we published episode 9 last week. And he sent me this great message on social media, on Instagram. He said, Ralphie, I just want to tell you that I found your podcast and listened to all 9 episodes in a day. It's great. As a diehard Yankees fan, it's tiring listening to a podcast where a wannabe expert overanalyzes everything in a 162-game season. I love how your format and how it's about general topics regarding the team we love. It's far more enjoyable to listen to. You are very talented, have a very relaxing and easy-to-listen-to voice. Just wanted you to know there are fans out there loving the new show. Keep up the great work. Adam, thank you so much for that. You know, I posted a screenshot of that on social media, and a lot of my friends who have known about this podcast, me wanting to do it for quite some time, and who've listened and who've supported, which I'm thankful for, they reached out to me and they said, isn't it great that he got exactly what you're trying to do? And I said, no. I said, it's great that he got exactly what we're not trying to do. Because, you know, especially with the team playing so well, and yeah, I know they have some ground to make up against the Red Sox. We got a whole second half to the season, please, as we go into this All-Star break. You know, but with the team playing so well, what are you breaking down even on a weekly basis? Or, you know, I know some podcasts will do 2 to 3 a week. What are you breaking down? Like, who the Yankees are trading for, how Boone's managing the bullpen. Like, they got one of the best records in baseball. And we're certainly no experts on it either. We're just fans. So, Adam, thank you. To everybody who's been listening, thank you. I appreciate it. And you're going to love this week's episode as we have a chat over the phone. Rick Cerrone now owns, he's the president of Rick Cerrone Communications, so he basically has his own PR firm. He's also the editor-in-chief of Baseball Digest, really a legendary magazine that I think they're going to have some good stuff in the works later this year. We'll probably reconnect again with Rick about that, but his time at the Yankees, I mean, you know, you got the 6 World Series visits, the 4 championships, and so many things that happened in between those 10 years from 96 to 06. That's our guest this week, Rick Cerrone, the former senior director of public relations for the New York Yankees. We chat with him right now on episode number 10 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. And welcome back to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. My name is Ralphie Aversa. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts, and PinstripeLanesPodcast.com. It's crazy to think that we're approaching the 8-year anniversary of the passing of George Steinbrenner. And really, when you look at the latter part of his time as the owner of the New York Yankees, especially that time from 96 to 2006, there were so many different major events that happened with this organization. Of course, they made the playoffs every single year. They visited 6 fall classics, won 4 World Series championships, and then in that span, so many major moments, from free agent signings to historical moments, both regarding our national pastime and our country's history, even in some instances. And one person that had a front row seat to it all, matter of fact, Sports Illustrated called it the hottest seat in baseball, was the senior director of public relations for the New York Yankees. He served in that role from 96 to 06. He's currently the editor-in-chief of Baseball Digest and the president of Rick Cerrone Communications. Rick Cerrone joins us on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Rick, hey, thanks so much for making some time for us this week. How are you?
No problem, Ralphie, and thank you for that very accurate and terrific introduction.
Curious, I'd love to start, you know, I know early on in your career, Rick, you worked in MLB's office, and then you worked for the Pirates, started with the Yankees in 96. How did you get involved with the Yankees?
Well, if you go back to 1970, when I was a sophomore in high school, and I was literally flunking out of high school, and my new guidance counselor, who doubled as the football coach, asked me a question. When he asked this question, I thought, this is a setup, because his answer is going to be, well, you're probably going to need a high school diploma for that. So his question to me was, what do you see yourself doing? If you could do anything you want, what do you see yourself doing in, let's say, 10 years? Now I'm thinking, whatever I respond, he's going to say, well, you're probably going to need a high school diploma. And my answer was, I'm the public relations director of the New York Yankees. And he was really taken aback. And to make a long story short, he said to me, he made a bargain with me. He said, well, if you can get and keep your grades up, do you think you can do for my football team what the PR director of the Yankees, who at the time was Bob Fischel, does for the Yankees? And I basically said, well, when do I start? So that's where the journey began, in my high school guidance counselor's office as a sophomore at Yorktown High School. A funny thing is, when I got out of college and I went to college for journalism, because that's what you studied if you wanted to be in PR at the time, especially sports PR. When I got out and got back home here, my job was not waiting for me at the New York Yankees. So I had a chance, an opportunity to get involved with a collector's magazine that I turned into a baseball magazine. So my first real job out of college was being the youngest editor and publisher of a nationally distributed magazine in the country. And it was started out as Baseball Quarterly, and then we morphed into Baseball Magazine. But I tell you that because in November of 1977, I landed an interview with George Steinbrenner, who did not own the Yankees when I first decided I wanted to be their PR director. But he did now, and he wasn't known as the boss back then, but his reputation was as a tough boss was pretty well established. And I landed in a Q&A interview with him for my magazine, and I asked him about his management style. Do you manage a Billy Martin differently than you manage a Reggie Jackson, whatever? Kind of an innocuous question, but his answer was this. He said, Rick, there are two types of leaders. Some men are Pattons, and some men are Eisenhowers, and I'm a Patton. And from that day forward, Ralphie, I left the office that day. I remember thinking on my way to the car in the parking lot, if I ever achieve my dream and become the PR director, that's how I'm going to play this. He's General Patton, and I'm a lowly corporal. So I always looked at it from the first day that I met him after I got the job, because he was not part of the interview. I didn't meet him until a month later in spring training, but he was General Patton. And I always addressed him as sir. I answered the phone, yes, sir. And I prefaced everything I said with sir, whether it was yes, sir, I will do that immediately, or sir, I cannot let you do that. So that's the way it went.
That's interesting. So you get the interview with the Yankees, but PR was seemingly, and the whole appearance of the team and media relations was such a big part of who the boss was. He wasn't involved with your interview process?
No. What happened was he terminated the PR director on Christmas Eve of 1995, and I started getting calls. I'm living in Pittsburgh at the time because I was running my own little business in Pittsburgh after leaving the Pirates when they literally ran out of money in 1993 and went on kind of an austerity budget. I started getting calls from people I knew that knew of my dream and knew that I had interviewed three or four times before over the years. And they said, hey, your job's open. And I'm like, well, look, I know that this young man's going to get his job back. I know Steinbrenner well enough from afar that, you know, these things work themselves out. But then they called back a week later and said, look, they offered the kid his job back. He didn't take it. The Yankees are looking for someone. They want a more senior person, and your name has come up. So if you want the job, call Arthur Richmond, who at the time was a senior advisor to Mr. Steinbrenner. He's doing the search, so to speak. So I called Arthur, who I had known for a number of years, I got the interview with a man named David Sussman, who was the chief operating officer. I was offered the job the day of the interview. Now, this was in it was in early January of 96. So I was probably there for 2 or 3 weeks before we left for spring training. But when I left for spring training in Tampa, and it was the first time anybody had gone to Tampa for spring training, because it used to be in Fort Lauderdale, I had had no contact whatsoever at that point with Mr. Steinbrenner. And I'm thinking, oh, this is a piece of cake. Well, that changed, upon my arrival in Florida, when I literally got in the same elevator with him and said, "Hey, Mr. Steinbrenner, I probably should introduce myself. I'm your new PR director." And, the rest is history.
That elevator encounter with Mr. Steinbrenner, was that kind of the moment when you realized, okay, this isn't, I mean, obviously you had been around baseball. This was the job you had aspired to have as a kid. But was that the moment, or was there a different moment throughout the course of that 96 season where you realized, whoa, this is a different beast than other baseball teams?
Well, the funny thing, it's kind of a funny story, because the elevator in the lobby of the stadium, and our offices, the PR offices and the press box, was on the third floor, and the executive offices was on the fourth floor. And I came around the corner, and I for some reason, I thought the door to the elevator was open. So I yelled out, as everybody does, "Hold that." And then when I got there, the guy holding the door is with a very not happy look on his face, that some yo-yo had asked him to hold the door, was Mr. Steinbrenner. So I said to him, as I just said, "I'm your new PR director. Why don't you?" Well, he kind of lit up, and he was, "Oh, my goodness." And I'll never forget what he said. He said, "Len Berman says great things about you." Now, Len Berman is a famous New York sportscaster who I knew, and I was like, "Thank you, Len." And he goes, "Well, if there's anything you need, you let me know." And he, gave me a little punch on the shoulder, and I got off on the third floor, and he went on to the fourth floor. So I'm thinking, wow, this isn't so bad. Well, the next day, I get a call in my office, and they said, "Meet Mr. Steinbrenner down in Max's office." And Max was the gentleman that ran the lunchroom, the press dining room. So I went down there, and Max is sitting behind a desk, and Mr. Steinbrenner is sitting in a chair, and he hands me this list of all the people that had signed in the day before to eat lunch in the press room. And he was like, "Would you explain this to me?" He goes, "I'm feeding all these people for nothing?" And yeah, "Well, why am I doing that?" I'm like, "Sir, you built this ballpark. You put a press room in." I said, "I just got here." I said, if you want me to close the press room or charge them for lunch, you just say the word." But I'm like, and he looked at me like, "Oh, this is not going to be good."
Right.
And we had I have to tell you, Ralphie, we had a phenomenal relationship. He never fired me, and he also never accepted my resignations. I learned, or I had a pretty good idea of what it would take to be successful with Mr. Steinbrenner. He didn't want a yes person. He didn't want someone that he wanted you to have an answer for him. And I pretty much, for the most part, did it respectfully. There was a time or two when I wasn't respectful, and I am forever grateful that he didn't say, "Hey, listen, I think the world of you, but I can't have you, talking to me like this," or whatever. But it was a heck of a ride.
Former senior director of public relations for the New York Yankees, Rick Cerrone, here with us on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. You say resignations, plural. You tried multiple times to leave your job?
Well, there was three in a span of 5 weeks in 2003.
Oh, wow.
One was the day of the Matsui press conference. One was the first game of spring training. One was another day when he called me wanting to do something. And I think what I said to him, I said, "Well, if you're going to do that, then I think you're going to have to find yourself a new PR director." And he said, "Yeah, you're probably right." And he hung up, and I'm like, I don't know, did I just quit? Did I just get fired? And it was like George Costanza. My wife Bailey said, "Just go back to work like nothing." But I said, "No." I said, "This is a time when I got to make a stand here about this, because, he wanted to do something that that baseball wouldn't have let him do." So I put a call into his office that morning, and I said, "Would have Mr. Steinbrenner call me when he gets in and gets a chance." And the day went by, and he never called. And then finally he did, and he just went on about whatever the subject was, but made no mention of what happened yesterday. And I at the end basically said, you know, hey, we need to talk about yesterday. And he goes, yeah, I thought about it, and you're 100% right. Stupid idea, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I said, I'm a little concerned here. I said, you know, you've brought in this Japanese player, Matsui, who's the biggest person in Japan, and I have to be assured that when you look down on the field and you see 100 more people than you're used to seeing, that you say to yourself, well, if Cerrone credentialed them, then they're okay. And he goes, well, I promise you that that's what I'll do.
And did he do it?
I will tell you one thing about bringing Hideki Matsui to the Yankees, which I thought was going to be the death of me in my career, because how are we going to handle the influx of Asian media? But if you ask me today, looking back, Rick, what was the single biggest problem you ever encountered with, you know, the signing of Matsui? I couldn't give you an answer. It was the most enjoyable, pleasurable experience, largely because of him and who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And what a professional he was and what a great person he was. And he also had we brought in an Asian media conduit, so to speak, Isao Haruka. And Isao just made my life so easy. But that's when it started that, I mean, we had never, and we were the New York Yankees, and 7, 8 years into the job, when we were going on the road, we didn't send a list ahead of time. Here's who we're bringing. Here's the media. But from that moment on, we had to send every team that we visited in spring training and in the regular season the complete list of all of the media and the outlets so that they could accommodate them. And in some cases, how do you go to Bradenton where their press box, the Pirates press box, may have seated, 20 people, and you have 45?
Wow.
You know, it was quite an undertaking, but it was a great, fun experience, which was far different than the first Japanese player we had signed, Hideki Arabu, which just didn't work on any level. I really liked Hideki. I'm so distraught that he took his own life, you know, a few years back. You know, he had such a bad relationship with the Asian media. They didn't like him. He didn't like them. So there were, you know, a number of, you know, if you said to me, well, what problems did you have? I could list them for you. But with Matsui, it was completely different. I guess we learned a little bit, and, you know, he was a different person, and I don't want to take anything away from Hideki Arabu, who I think was a good person, and I really liked him. I remember going out to see him specifically at a baseball card show, 6 or 7 years ago, specifically to see guys like that, and his signing time wasn't when I was there, and I was disappointed. And I was, as I was leaving, he got off the elevator and he like lit up, and oh my goodness, he gave me a big hug and everything. So I guess bygones were bygones, but it was two very different experiences.
I one more question just directly related to Mr. Steinbrenner, because you mentioned when obviously the Matsui signing, bringing in a conduit mm-hmm. that could help you with the Asian media. Obviously, Mr. Steinbrenner had his own publicist as well. How, if at all, did that affect your job as the senior director of public relations for the Yankees?
Well, he had a publicist. I called him the Babe Ruth of publicists, Howard Rubenstein, and Rubenstein and Associates, who had hundreds of celebrities and politicians and why. And he was to do like his personal PR or non-baseball. But I can only probably tell you that having Howard there naturally made my life a lot easier. And Howard would tell you at the time that my being there made his life with Mr. Steinbrenner easier, because we worked very, very well together. You know, Howard might say, here's the statement I'm going to issue from Mr. Steinbrenner, right? And I might say, well, I don't know that you want to say it, that maybe you want to say it this way, or maybe, you know, whatever. And we worked really well together. So he certainly made my job a lot easier. He never did anything like, oh, I can't believe that, you know, I got to deal with this now because of something that happened, because of something Howard did. I think that we really, really worked well together. And as I said, he was the Babe Ruth of publicist. So,
as we mentioned at the top, so many things happened throughout the course of the 10 years that you spent with the Yankees. We just celebrated the 20th anniversary of David Wells' perfect game, mm-hmm. and obviously one of the big stories behind that is, you know, the fact that the night before he's out with the SNL cast and he's partying. He shows up to the stadium the next day. He's hungover. He's got a splitting headache. He goes on to pitch a perfect game. We're coming up though on the 20-year anniversary of David Cone's perfect game, and not.
Right. Right.
Not a lot is, you know, I feel like Cone is a very, especially as it relates to your job, is an integral figure with the Yankees for a couple different reasons. First of all, what, if anything, do you remember about that day in 1999 in July when Cone threw the perfect game?
Well, I remember a great deal about it because it was Yogi Berra Day. Let me say something first about David Cone. You could not have a better person on your team. And there were a lot of people like that. I mean, there were so many great people, people that you might not think of, Darryl Strawberry, like for me, Roger Clemens, Mike Messina, guys that were real professionals. And one thing that I, and I'm going to be really honest with you, you know, when people that aspire to these jobs, if you think you could go in and be a fan, well, you're gonna be slapped down pretty quickly when you realize that someone that you idolize or somebody just doesn't like you, or you know, or isn't cooperative with you or whatever. But one of the things I said is, look, I don't know these people. I don't know what they did last night or this morning. When I ask them to do an interview or when I ask them to do something and they might give you, you know, not today, whatever, I don't know what transpired before, what's going on in that person's life. I'm not walking in his shoes. But, you know, David Cone was a guy that was just a real professional. And so if you get to 1999, obviously David's one of our key players, key pitchers. He'd been there since the day I got there in 96. And what I remember was that it was Yogi Berra Day, and Mr. Steinbrenner, because he had just reconciled with Yogi, and I was a big part of that, because he called me up and said, hey, Susan Waldman's got this crazy idea that I should go out to the museum and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, I think it's a great idea. And he'll never forget, he said, that's just because he's your friend, meaning Yogi. I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, I've met the man 2 times in my life. I think it's the right thing for you to do. And I gave him all my reasons, whatever. He says, all right, well, I'll do it. But you're going with me, and you might not be coming back home with me. If it's like, okay, whatever. So we went out and did that. And when we were driving to Yogi's museum, I never saw him so nervous. And when we left the museum, I never saw him happier and more elated, even after we won world championships.
Wow.
So now he's reconciled with Yogi, and he decides he's going to give Yogi a day in July of 1999. Now, Yogi had been back to the stadium probably on opening day, and then he came back for the Joe DiMaggio day when we unveiled the monument for DiMaggio. And Debbie Timon, who's still the senior vice president of marketing and does such an unbelievable job, she and I had kind of, and her staff had kind of pieced together the DiMaggio ceremony. But with the DiMaggio ceremony, we had the unveiling of the monument, you know, and we could bring in a Paul Simon to sing Where Have You Gone, Joe DiMaggio from Mrs. Robinson, and we did a lot of things. But with the Yogi thing, he already had the plaque. His number was already retired, so we had to kind of piece together a really nice ceremony, which I think we did. So that's what our focus was on. So when the game starts and everything, I probably was the second or third inning before I realized that anything was kind of going on. Well, then we went through the drill that we had been through many times. You get to the seventh inning, make sure you've got to, you know, you don't want to jinx anything, but you got to be ready. You got to be ready for a post-game press conference. And we did it for Gooden. We did it for probably somebody else that might have gotten past the sixth or seventh inning. We certainly did it for David Wells. Well, now we went into the no-hit or perfect game mode. Get the room set up. So, you know, that's what I remember. But and the other thing is, what are the odds that Don Larson's going to be there and throw out the first pitch before the game? That was really kind of neat, and it was, and they embraced, and they were together immediately after the game. So, you know, just another day at the ballpark, because every day you go there, you never know what's going to happen.
And so, again, so many things happened. I mean, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I do have a couple more questions I want to hit.
Please,
on with chatting with Rick Cerrone, of course, who was the senior director of public relations for the Yankees. He now runs, he's the president of Rick Cerrone Communications. One more, I guess, specific memory, 2001, President George W. Bush throwing out the first pitch during the World Series. The infamous story of, as he's warming up, the Secret Service wants him to wear the bulletproof vest. He's a little nervous about it. He's warming up. And of course, Derek Jeter approaches him and warns him not to bounce it because the crowd's going to boo.
Boo you.
Are you there witnessing all that?
No, they were off in a place, you know, where there were batting cages in the bowels of the stadium, and Derek probably was in there taking swings and stuff, and I was in the dugout. I remember somebody pointing to me, asking me the question, why are there 7 umpires? Because they only use 6.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, well, maybe they dress somebody and he's down here for photos and he'll go in the clubhouse in case somebody... I'm thinking, you know, what if one of the 6 gets hurt? You don't want to play a World Series game with 5. So he probably goes into the umpire's dressing room and just waits till somebody gets hurt or gets sick or whatever. It turns out it was an armed Secret Service agent.
Wow.
That was kind of masquerading as an umpire. But the other thing I remember is that, now, I had met President Bush earlier that year when we went to the White House to celebrate the winning of the 2000 championship. And the funny thing is, when I met the president, you get in this line and you give the attendant there a card, and that person reads your name so that the president would know this is Paul O'Neill or this is, you know, Paul Mastropasqua or whoever it might be. And I hand the person my card, and he says, Rick Cerrone. And immediately President Bush says, Seton Hall. Because Rick Cerrone, with 1 R, the catcher, went to Seton Hall. So that shows you right there what a baseball guy President Bush was. I'd say a fan, but, I mean, he did own the Texas Rangers, so he's more than a fan.
Right.
So I then had to explain to him, no, I'm not that Rick Cerrone, which he was like, what? How's that possible? But anyway, so I had met him briefly. So now I'm standing in the dugout, and I'm standing next to a woman from Major League Baseball, Phyllis Merridge, who obviously knew President Bush when he was an owner and probably before that. And I kind of look to my left, and down in the on the stairs is President Bush. And when he sees me look over, he gets my attention and he goes, hey, Phyllis, get Phyllis. So I tap Phyllis. I said, the president won. And Phyllis looks down and he gives her this look like, can you imagine that I'm standing here going to throw out the first pitch at Yankee Stadium? It was kind of a neat little moment that only Phyllis and I would George Bush would remember. But then he went out and, you know, waved to the crowd, and, like, you know, the script here is that you've got to throw a perfect strike, and boy, did he deliver. So
I don't know if you ever allow yourself, and we have a few more questions here for mm-hmm. Rick Cerrone on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I don't know if you, I mean, and certainly now, again, as the president of your own communications company, you certainly do deal with this as well. But I mean, do you imagine what that job is as the head of PR for the Yankees in this day and age of social media?
I think it's a much different job today because, well, number one, under Mr. Steinbrenner, you could focus only on baseball. You couldn't think outside the box at all. If you came up with an idea, hey, I want to do this social media campaign, or he had his eye on the you know, at the time there were no concerts at Yankee Stadium. There were no, you know, we want to mess up the field. He was totally focused on winning. That era is kind of gone, you know, by necessity. I mean, we live in a social media age today. I mean, I started there in 1996 when I thought the greatest invention was that what was called a robofax. Deadlines were different. We could put, you know, we could hold something until tomorrow's papers. But when you put it out now, something out now, it's out there immediately.
Right.
There's no, it's going to be in the morning paper. If you got past the 11 o'clock news, you were safe until the next day. So those days are gone. And I think that there's a lot more challenges today for a PR person.
You mentioned some of the different events at the stadium. Now, obviously, again, you're senior director of public relations for the Yankees at the time. But even still, I mean, I remember, and one of the reasons why I asked this question is because before the season began, Yankees PR reached out to me about attending a Yankee Stadium tasting event where I got to go through on the Audi Club and taste all of the new food offerings this year. So do you ever imagine as well what it would be like, how the new stadium would affect the job as head of PR for the Yankees?
I probably never did. I mean, when my last year there was the day when we were really starting, the time when we were really starting to plan. But again, I was there under the ownership of George Steinbrenner and until the last season or two when he kind of backed away a little bit for health reasons. You know, it was your eye on the prize. And you know, I would come up with ideas, you know, let's have this guy go on the David Letterman show, and I get nixed because, you know, you know, we don't want them staying up that late. Well, the tape's at 5 o'clock. Well, you know, just, you know, everything was based on winning, and, you know, and not that it isn't today, believe me, nobody wants to win more than the Yankees do, trust
right.
me. But we really weren't allowed to kind of go too much outside the box at that time.
Wrapping up here, final question for Rick Cerrone. You have the World Series rings. Any other mementos or maybe one in particular from your time with the Yankees that's a keepsake that you'll never let go of that you always think of?
Boy, that's really interesting. You know, when you get six, I think the best thing is that I got enough World Series rings that I was able to promise one to my son when he graduated college, which he held me to, and he now has my 1996 ring.
Wow.
And on Father's Day a number of years ago, I was able to give my 98 ring to my dad. So I can't think of anything. I just think most of it is in the memories, the experiences that my son was able to have. I mean, you know, my son being a bat boy in spring training for a couple games, you know, I mean, you couldn't trade anything for that. So, and the other thing is, and I was talking to someone about this just the other day, when you think about it, what would people pay in like an auction, a charity auction, for an experience, you know, fly on the team plane, all right, I'll pay $10,000 for that, or you know, be on the field for whatever it might be. I actually got to fill in for Bob Shepard as the PA announcer on more than one occasion when he happened to have laryngitis. What would someone pay if you said, I'll let you do an inning? I got to do like three games.
Right. Wow.
So those are the things more than anything that I can think of that's, you know, something physical. But the rings are really nice, believe me. Person about a week ago, my wife and I were out to dinner, and this woman was, whoa, that's a really nice ring. What is it? I said, that's a world championship ring. And she goes, how did you get it? I said, we won the World Series. Oh, you know, one person said once, she goes, one person came up to me one time and said, oh, that's a really nice ring. You must be a big fan. I'm like, yeah, well, I am, so.
He's now the editor-in-chief of Baseball Digest and, of course, the president of Rick Cerrone Communications. A lot of great stories here, and he gave us a lot more time than we asked for as well with the former senior director of public relations for the New York Yankees, Mr. Rick Cerrone. Rick, hey, thank you again for making some time for me in this little podcast and for sharing the insight. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Ralphie. Anytime.
And that's a wrap on episode number 10 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Thank you for finding us. Please, if you haven't already, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get podcasts. We're at Pinstripe Lanes, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, pinstripelanespodcast.com. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Thanks for tuning in, and let's go Yankees.